The Columbia Broadcasting System, in collaboration with the British Broadcasting Corporation, brings you Transatlantic Call, People to People. This is another of the international exchange features, which originates alternately in England and the United States. Today's program comes from Britain, and you will hear Getting to Know Britain. We join the listeners in the British Isles in exactly 3 seconds.
Hello, America. This is James McKechnie speaking from London. I want you to meet a friend of mine, Joe Kramer. Yes, Joe's an American. Some of you listening now may know him. But Joe's been over in Britain for 2 years now, and he's not exactly the same Joe you remember, drafted in Piquet, Ohio, back in 1942. No, 2 years of war over here in Britain have changed him, well, just a little. Still, I think you'll recognize him at that. I met Joe on the boat coming back from the States 2 years ago. At least, I was coming back. Joe was coming over. He's a fortress gunner with the 8th Air Force, and this was his first trip over to Britain. Yes, he was just a little excited, I dare say. The trip across had been rough, and Joe had been sick. Most of us had been sick. But now the trip was just about over. The ship was sailing up the river, and there, on either side of us, were the green hills. The hills of Scotland. I was watching them, leaning upon the rail, and Joe came over to join me.
Hello there.
Hello, Joe. How are you feeling?
Oh, fine, now that the ship stopped rowing about so much. I guess we should be ashore before long.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sometime tomorrow, probably. How do you like the view?
Oh, yeah, that's pretty. You know, I didn't know it was so green and hilly over in England.
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, this is Scotland. But you'll find England much the same.
I thought Scotland was part of England.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No, Scotland's another country entirely, laddie. But we string along together, you know. Scots, English, and Welsh.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You know, that's a lovely sight, the river and the hills, the sunset back there. And I always thought England was all towns and factories and that. I didn't think it'd look so good.
Well, you'll see plenty of towns, all right. But there's far more open country. England's not so hilly as this, except up north, and the country is softer and warmer.
Well, I'd like to take a picture of that in Kodachrome and send it back to my girl.
Oh, well, you won't get any color film over here now, or even ordinary film.
No, I'm afraid you have to send her a postcard.
Look, you see up that inlet there? That loch? Loch Lomond's up there, among the mountains. The heather will be out soon, and then the hills will turn all purple, and the bracken turns to a rich, warm gold, and the scarlet berries come out on the rounds. Autumn's a fine time up in Scotland. I think you ought to take some time off to see it.
Oh, thanks. I will.
That was in the summer of 1942. I left Scotland and I went down to London, where I live. I heard from Joe once or twice. He was moving around the country a bit and what he called getting acquainted. England, and Scotland for that matter, seemed to be different in many ways from what he'd expected. And when I met him 6 months later in London, I wanted to know just what he thought of it all. In fact, that was about the first thing that I asked him.
What do I think of it all? I think it's swell.
Yes, I know that. Countryside and so on. But what do you really think of it? How does life over here seem to you after life in the States?
Well, it's kind of hard to say. Now, some things I like a lot. Some things I don't like so much. I guess that's just because they're different from the way they are back home.
And you expected them to be the same?
Well, no, not exactly. You see, the Army gave me a little book to read when I come over. I carry it around and look at it a lot. Have you seen it?
Hmm? A Short Guide to Great Britain. Oh, yes. Yes. Pretty good, too, don't you think?
Oh, sure. Hmm. Listen, the guy that wrote this knew what he was talking about. Look right here on page 2.
Yes?
It says, the British are often more reserved in conduct than we. On a small, crowded island where 45 million live, each man learns to guard his privacy carefully. And is equally careful not to invade another man's privacy. Yeah, the British are reserved, all right. Now, let me tell you. I was on a train the other day. You know, one of those compartments that hold about 10 or 12 people? Well, this time there was only the three of us, me and a couple Englishmen. We'd been in the train about a half hour, and, of course, nobody said a word. So, well, I picked out, pulled out a pack of cigarettes and passed them around, you know? Kind of break the silence. A cigarette?
Oh, thanks. Yes.
Thank you. Have you got used to English cigarettes yet?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I stick to these. Is it far into Reading?
No. We are nearly there by now. Just about 5 minutes more.
Oh, good. Do either of you gentlemen know the Tarrant at all?
Yes, I live there.
So do I.
Well, do you happen to know Stanford Road?
Yes, that's funny. I live in Stanford Road. Whereabouts do you want?
Number 52, a Mrs. Jones.
Why, I live right opposite. Number 55, I'll take you.
Well, what do you know? It's quite a coincidence, huh?
As a matter of fact, I live about 3 doors further down on the same side. Number 58.
Say, what is this? I didn't realize you two knew each other.
Well, just by sight, you know. You're Mr. Heaton, aren't you?
That's right, Mr.
Jackson. Glad to know you.
Oh, now, wait a minute. You mean you two live opposite each other and you've never spoken before?
No, I don't believe we have.
Well, how long's this been going on?
Well, I suppose it must be about 10 years.
Yes, I suppose we are reserved, right enough. And I suppose it still seems rather funny to an American.
It certainly seemed funny to Joe.
Oh, it is funny. Now, those two lived opposite each other for 10 years. They traveled back on the same train. They'd not even gotten around to saying hello. I guess my little book's right about being careful not to invade one another's privacy.
What does your little book say about our being conservative?
In politics, you mean?
No, I mean just slow to adopt new ideas.
Well, it says you just like being that way. And I guess you do, too, in some ways. Now, back home, the first thing we ask about anything is, does it work? But over here, you seem to ask, how long have I been used to it? You know, I was having dinner with an old lady last winter. She's a nice old lady. Asked me home to dinner, gave me a wonderful time. She got one of those big old houses in Chelsea, you know, sort of Victorian. The dining room was kind of cold. In fact, it was darn near freezing.
Do have some more meat, won't you? Are you quite warm over there, away from the fire?
Oh, sure, I'm fine, thanks.
Are the winters as cold as this back in America?
Well, they vary. Where I come from, they're often colder, but not so damp. You don't seem to notice it so much.
I suppose our building seemed very small after your skyscraper.
Well, now, out where I live, we don't have any skyscrapers, ma'am. Just houses and stores, like an English town. Only the houses aren't so large as this.
Oh, I thought they'd be much bigger.
No, they're mostly just ornery frame houses, you know, built of wood. Not brick or stone like all the houses in England.
Built of wood? But aren't they awfully cold and damp?
No. I guess they're a lot warmer than brick or stone. They've got central heating in most of them.
Yes, that is warm, isn't it? My son wanted me to have it here, but I'd far sooner have a nice coal fire. It makes the room look so much more cheerful.
Yes, ma'am. Looks kind of nice, but only heats one room at a time. It doesn't heat the rest of the house.
No, I suppose it doesn't. And with this fuel rationing, you can't have fires in more than one or two rooms. And it is very cold in the cellar.
In the cellar?
Yes. All these old houses have cellars. We use them to keep coal in. And they're very good for keeping milk and food in during the hot weather. They're beautifully cool in summer.
Yeah, save you an icebox.
Oh, they do. All these old houses are very solid and well-built. This one's nearly 100 years old. No, I'm sure I could never get used to living in a wooden house.
In fact, you'd rather stay cold, huh?
Oh, I'm not cold, really. It's only my back that's cold.
Used to us by degrees. He got used to the way we do things and the way we like things done.
He began to realize that if life wasn't so speedy and up-to-date as in America, it was largely because we preferred it easy-going. In some ways, he grew to like it that way himself. And you even grow to see why we like things old and mellow and friendly. Some of our lovely old country towns that look so old that the stones of the houses and cottages just seem to grow right out of the ground they were built on. Of course, mind you, it wasn't that way at first. I was down in the country with him about a year ago.
Hey, it's a nice herd of cattle you got there, sir.
Yes, it's good cattle country around here. For you in America.
That's right.
The farms will be bigger back where you come from, I expect.
No, I guess not. My folks farm about a couple hundred acres.
Is it good land?
Sure, it's good land when the weather's right.
Well, it won't be as good land as this, though. Do you know how long this land's been farmed?
No, how long?
For 2,000 years there's been farmers in this valley. Why, before the Romans come here.
Say, it's a long time, but doesn't the land get kind of farmed down after all that time?
What? This land? No, the longer the better. What you take out of the land, you got to put back into it, that's all. Why, my family's been farming here since Queen Elizabeth's time. Longer than that, I dare say. Here, you see that church over there?
Yeah.
Do you know how old she is?
No.
800 years old, that church is.
800 years old? Gosh, you know what?
What?
Well, back home, we'd sort of figure it was time we built us a new one. I was only kidding. But of course, I did get so darn tired of hearing how old everything was. Back home in Pickway, we don't even have the biggest anything in the world. Like you think we're always boasting we've got. Funny thing is, when you've really got something to sound off about, well, something you can be proud of, you never are. Now, I met a bomber pilot in the RAF the other day.
Well, there was nothing to it, really. It was a piece of cake.
A piece of cake. That was a bomb run over Cologne through the heaviest flak ever reported. Coming home with half a wing shot away. Then that little old woman in Stockwell.
The Blitz? Oh, yes. We had a few bad nights, you know. Oh, yes, I have. Oh, yes. That went in 1940.
That went in 1940. They dug her out of the rubble after she'd been buried 14 hours. And a man from a place in Surrey.
A coach and horses? Well, as a matter of fact, they made a rather a mess of the old place.
That was a direct hit with a 1,000-pound bomb. Rather a mess. I'll say it was rather a mess. There wasn't any old place left, just sort of a hole in the ground. Tell you, it's like I wrote my girl last week. The British are so darn fond of understatement, they'd have called the San Francisco earthquake a slight seismic disturbance.
Well, we probably did.
But do you still hear from your girl, then?
Oh, sure, I heard from her last week. She's doing fine.
What else did you write her about us?
Well, I wrote her quite a bit. I'll tell you one thing I did say.
Mm-hmm.
I said you were just about the most orderly, law-abiding people I'd ever met.
Ah, no gangster, you mean. And the policeman going about unarmed.
Sure. But apart from that sort of thing, you've got a sense of law and order kind of ingrained in you. You never seem to do anything wrong. Nobody ever seems to do a darn thing that he shouldn't do. Not even when he's just been blown up by a flying bomb.
Okay, Joe. I'll buy it. What happened?
Well, I was standing in a lineup for the bus the other day.
Is this right for 73?
73?
Yes, 73 bus to Hammersmith.
That's right. There'll be one along in a minute.
Thanks. It's quite a job getting on a bus at this time.
Oh, that's right. There never seems to be any shoving. You should see a lineup back in the States.
Lineup? Oh, you mean a queue?
Yeah. They just pile in the best way they can get. You got your people pretty well chained out here.
Well, we don't stand for no nonsense, you know.
I was on the bus the other day and a woman was getting off.
Uh-huh.
She gave me tuppence and said to give it to the conductor.
Oh.
She'd not got around for the fares yet. I thought that was good.
How'd you mean?
Well, back home, she probably figured it was a smart thing to get off of that pain. Anyhow, how'd she know I wouldn't keep it?
No, you wouldn't do that. Everybody does it, they, Boy, look out. Here comes another of them. Get down, mate. Oh, this is a near one. It's a game, ain't it?
Well, was it a near one?
Oh, was it a near one? Brother, that doodlebug was so darn near the blast blew the whole cue flat. Those that hadn't got down already, like me and the fella. Wait till you hear the payoff. We all get up to our feet again and begin to brush ourselves off and wait for the bus. The woman taps me on the shoulder and says, "Excuse me, but I was in front of you." Can you beat that?
Well, hadn't she been? By this time, of course, Joe had got pretty well used to us, though he still wasn't quite sure when he was having his leg pulled. But he'd come to accept our way of understating everything, and our habit of taking everything as we find it, and learning to put up with almost anything that goes. There's not much variety in the food over here, but we just make the best of anything we can get. At least we cook it our way. Joe still preferred to hold his fork in his right hand when he was eating, but he got quite used to the fact that we preferred to hold it in our left hand. He knew that we drank our beer half warm because it spoils the beer to serve it off the ice, but he didn't see how anything could make the beer any worse than it tasted to him already. Phil got used to the fact that we liked our beer to taste that way. The pity is, of course, that Joe wasn't seeing Britain at her best. Over here, we're all a bit self-conscious about that. I mean about the way Britain must look to a visitor at present. All rather dirty and not very well cared for.
Sure, but you can't help that in wartime. You got too many other things on your mind. Besides, things don't look bad at all. And the people don't look so badly dressed either. Not like they seem to think they do. I was in a pub the other night.
But the way the girls dress, I'm sure our clothes must have been very plain after New York.
Oh, no, listen. The way your clothes are rationed over here, I guess you look pretty smart.
What? Me in slacks and an old jacket.
Well, back home, I guess we always dressed a bit more free and easy than you used to over here.
Well, you couldn't have dressed more free and easy than I do.
Well, I don't know. Now you're wearing slacks and a jacket. You've got a sort of scarf around your hair. But you're still wearing a pair of gloves. That'd look kind of funny to us.
Yes, I know. But I'm not wearing gloves just to look dressy. Look. Look at my hands.
Gosh, they don't look so good. Got something wrong with them?
Yes, it's with working at the factory. I've been doing part-time on wool work, making airplane parts. The oil and the metal shavings got into my skin, and now I can't even wash them. They look a fine old mess, don't they?
Gee, I'm sorry. They look pretty bad. They'll be all right again, won't they?
Oh, yes. The doctor's given me some stuff to put on them. But I have to wear gloves all the time. It looks so silly.
Yeah. You know, I thought you were just being correct or something.
Oh, Lord, no. Most incorrect. But the silliest thing of all is my not being able to wash it all. You see, Daddy's the director of a big soap works.
Last orders, Jakes, please.
I suppose it was rather silly, come to think of it, but that's half as silly as I felt. You know, somehow there always seems to be a good reason for things in England, especially since the war. Sometimes when you're out in the country and you come on one of those sleepy old English villages, the streets so narrow a truck can hardly get through them, we almost begin to think that if you were as old as it was, you'd have tried things every other way. And reckon you like them best the way they were at first. Yeah. I've even felt that way in London sometimes. On London Bridge, early one morning, just as the sun was rising. Looking down on the river and the barges and the skyline of the docks. Yeah.
Earth has not anything to show more fair. Dull would he be of soul who could pass by a sight so touching in its majesty. The city now doth like a garment wear the beauty of the morning. Silent, bare, ships, towers, domes, theatres, and temples lie open unto the fields and to the sky, all bright and glittering in the smokeless air.
Never did sun more beautifully steep in his first splendor valley, rock, or hill. Ne'er saw I, never felt a calm so deep. The river glideth at his own sweet will. Dear God, the very houses seem asleep, and all that mighty heart is lying still. London. Sometimes you'd hardly know there was a war on. Not so very far away.
If it wasn't for the bombing.
No, I guess not. Look at the sun on the dome of St. Paul's Cathedral. It almost looks as though it's on fire.
You should have seen it the night it nearly was on fire. The whole sky lit up for miles, it was.
That must have been quite a sight.
Yes, it was a rum time, 1940. Looked like our number was up then, all right.
That's what it looked like to us. But I guess you just don't know when you're licked over here.
That's right, mate. That's why we never are licked. Never been beaten, we haven't.
Not since Bunker Hill, brother.
Bunker Hill? Bunker Hill? That was in Libya, wasn't it? Good old Monty. Lose every battle except the last. That's us.
Well, Joe, what do you make of that?
Oh, say, that's rich. You know, I guess there's nothing you can do about the British. First, it almost gets your goat till you see the funny side of it. Still, that's the way you pulled through after Dunkirk, just by taking it all for granted that you'd win out in the long run. Yeah, I can take that complacency and the feeling you can lick the world. In fact, there's only one thing over here I can't take.
What's that? The coffee?
No, apart from the coffee and the tea and the beer and the cigarettes...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the social distinctions you've got over here, all these lords and things. You're a democracy, all right. Anyone can see that. But when you're democratic, I can't see why you put up with an aristocracy and privileges.
But, Joe, surely anyone with money has privileges. Henry Ford has privileges.
Sure, but Henry Ford earned his money. And a lord doesn't earn anything. He doesn't have to. He's born a lord.
How do you know? May have been given a peerage for something he's done, like Lord Nuffield or Lord Austin, our car manufacturers.
Okay, that's only two. Most of them just inherit their talent.
Well, a lot of men inherit their father's money.
Sure, but it's not just money I'm talking about. Now, a lord shouldn't be able to run the country just because he's born a lord.
He doesn't, Joe. He doesn't. The peerage doesn't have any real political power at all. Look, take that bill. It was way back in the 20s. It was a bill that was thrown out by the House of Lords. They threatened to veto it. Well, what happened?
What?
Well, the government, the House of Commons, threatened to create so many new lords that they'd be able to outvote the whole House of Lords.
Is that constitutional?
Oh, perfectly, yes, in a democracy. But it is rather unusual. In fact, it's never yet been necessary.
Yeah, but look here. What's the sense in having lords if you can make them and break them like that?
Well, I suppose we like having them.
Yeah, but why? Where's the sense in it?
Well, what's it say in your little book, eh? Where's the sense in watching a game of football? You do it because you like it, that's all.
Okay. But in football, you got something you can watch. Can't watch a lot of lords.
Sure you can, if you want to. Wearing their coronets now and again. Joe, did you see the coronation?
No, I can't say I did.
Or the silver jubilee?
Nope.
Well, for sheer pageantry, there was nothing quite like them. And the British are fond of pageantry, like the changing of the guard, Lord Mayor's show. Actually, the coronation was the greatest show on earth.
Well, give me Ringling Brothers.
All right, let's have both.
Okay, but you don't have to wait 25 years to see Ringling Brothers.
No, sir, but perhaps you'd like it all the more if you did. And don't forget one thing.
What's that?
Well, we can afford to wait for the coronation. It's had a long run in London. We've been having them now for over 1,000 years.
Over 1,000 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Say, I guess that beats Tobacco Road.
No, Joe didn't get to like everything over here, but he did get to respect the way we felt about things, even hereditary titles and coronations. He showed me what it said in his little book. It was this. These customs may seem strange and old-fashioned, but they give the British the same feeling of security and comfort that many of us get from the familiar ritual of a church service.
And look what it says right after that. It says, the important thing to remember... is that within this apparently old-fashioned framework, the British enjoy a practical, working 20th-century democracy. Yeah, there's not much doubt about that. The girl with the mussed-up hands proved it. She'd never worked in a factory before. Maybe she didn't have to now. She didn't want to, like the others. But I guess she thought it was her duty.
Yes. But come with me, Joe. I want you to meet a friend of mine. I think you'll like her. I took Joe across London, down to a new deep shelter, not very far from the river. Over 1,000 people slept in that shelter when the recent bombing was at its height. They slept in bunks, like they have them in the tube shelters. Old men, old women who had lost their homes, mothers with young children, men with babies in their arms. Mostly they came from South London, where the Blitz and the flying bombs had done most damage. Some of them had been sleeping in the shelters for almost 4 years. But all of them were very cheerful. It was there that we met her.
Quite a community, aren't we?
Yeah, sort of an underground city.
They're not all here yet. It'll begin to fill up in about half an hour.
Well, everyone seems to be quite at home down here.
Well, I think they are. In fact, this shelter is the only home that most of them have now. Until we can get their proper homes rebuilt, and that's going to be quite a job.
Boy, I can imagine. Still, they all seem cheerful enough.
Yes. They're cheerful because they feel secure. They know that they're quite safe down here, and being together gives them plenty of friends to talk to. Look at those two old men over there.
Yeah, yeah, that's one.
They're both bombed out on the same night, you know, and now you never see them apart. You know, it's a funny thing, but in some ways, this shelter has given people a greater sense of belonging together than they ever had before. You see, everyone has his own little part to play in keeping the place clean and comfortable and friendly.
Yeah, I can see that.
Well, that's something we've not got to lose when this war's over. We want the people to keep that sense of belonging together when they've all gone back to their separate homes, because that's what'll make them good citizens.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, I never thought of it quite that way before. And I've been in shelters often enough in that.
And there's another thing. We owe it to them to see that there's a life up there in the sunshine which they can all fit into. All these homeless people and the men who come back from the war, too. They've got to feel just as secure in peacetime as they do down here tonight. We know the stuff they're made of. They've got wonderful courage. And the part they play in that life, together... Well, that will be most of the post-war world for all of us.
Well, America, that is what one girl thought about the future. Life in Britain is different. It's different now from what it was before the war, even. It'll always be different from life in America. Different in the way we like to do things. But as for the things we like to do, well, I don't think those are very different. We may drive on different sides of the road, America, but we are both going the same way.
Yeah, I guess that's the way it is, Jimmy. As I read in my little book when I first came over, it said, you will soon find yourself among a kindly, quiet, hard-working people who have been living under a strain such as few people in the world have ever known. And as for me, well, I think my people and that people can get along very well together, just so long as they really want to.
Listening to Getting to Know Britain, another program in our series Transatlantic Call, People to People. These programs are shared by the British Broadcasting Corporation and the Columbia Broadcasting System of America. Getting to Know Britain was written and directed by Jeffrey Brightson. We return our transatlantic listeners to the Columbia Broadcasting System in America.
Listen again next week at this same time for another Transatlantic Call. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.